You are listening to the In Context podcast.
Hello and welcome to the In Context podcast. This episode features a hero of the faith, one of my favourite mighty men of God. The reason he's a hero of the faith is back in September I did a retreat and we were staying in this wonderful house and he gave up the ensuite room. It had a bathroom bigger than my living room. It had a walk-in cupboard bigger than my bedroom. It had a sofa. It was a beautiful room and he gave it up to share a bunk bed with Andy Constable. So today we have Jason Nelson, the greatest man of God I've ever met. How are you doing, brother?
Well, I'm doing good, Ian. You know, and it felt a little bit like home, right? More space, America, and, you know, I gave it all up. It's cultural adaptation is what it was.
Awesome. Oh, brother. Yeah, and that's why we've got you on. We are focusing on, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be looking at some Americans who have come over to the UK to serve in hard places. As many of our listeners know, the need for gospel work in hard places in the UK is great. Unfortunately, encouraging people to come and join us in our ministry is tough, is difficult, and we have more spaces than we have people wanting to fill these spaces. So we've branched out into the US. We had a young man called Luke joined us last year, and he was with us. He had to cut his trip short because of COVID. But you've stayed, brother. You've come and you had a chance to disappear, but you've stayed throughout COVID. So what brought you to the UK in the first place? Because in America, there's dozens of places that had probably have more poverty in the States than we have over in the UK. So what led you to work in a hard place in the UK rather than in the US?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's a need everywhere, like you said, right? Like when our family, there's a lot of story about why we came to Scotland behind this, but I think one of the things that, you know, as we looked at the UK, a country especially that has like really rich Christian heritage, doesn't it? And just how far they have strayed away from their roots in Christianity. When you look at it overall, it's an unreached people group again. I think at least in Scotland, what is it like 2.2% identify as Christian. And so we saw that and we're like, that's an unreached people group. And we, you know, I think as we started to get exposed a little bit more to 20 schemes as well, and the prospect of planting churches, not just in a country that's has a low population of people that identify as Christians, but also difficult areas where there's no gospel witness at all, it clearly presented a need, right? And an important need. But then the bigger question, I think, behind that, Ian, is what you're getting at is why us, right? Like, obviously, there's a need in these communities. Just because there's a need doesn't mean it's us that is coming to fill that need. Like, why is some American family from the middle of nowhere in Wyoming, right? But I think as we prayed about our gifting, where God had led us, and honestly, I think it does take a certain type of personality to come do some of this work and be in these areas and just kind of laid back attitude. I just feel like God had prepared our family for this, even though it was going to be different and harder. And so we felt God led us here and we came, and we've been here almost 3 years now.
Awesome. So like you say, you've come with a family, you've got a wife and a couple of children, and now you've got a
couple.
So what does your family look like then? And how difficult was it coming out to the UK? We've had people come over from the US who were single. What are some of the difficulties of relocating to the UK from America when you've got a family?
I think couple of things to reflect on that. I think some of the harder things about moving to the UK with a family, like if you're compared to if you're single, especially, I think it's a weighty decision, isn't it? I mean, single or not, it's a weighty decision to move. But when you're moving your family, it's not just me it's affecting, right? It's affecting my wife, and we have, well, when we moved here, 4 children. Now we have 5. So we have all these different feelings, emotions that are navigating culture. So it's not just me that has to do that, and I have to lead through that well. So we're finding actually that with that, even though one of the positives is we can talk about that as a family, like, you know, all the struggles we're going through and things like that, I feel like it might actually be taking us longer to fully feel comfortable because we're all dealing with it in different stages. And so I think as a whole for a family, it might take us a little bit longer. And we have to be okay with that. It takes a long suffering kind of, you got to play the long game. I think families coming here thinking, oh, we'll go serve a few years or whatever, it might struggle a lot more because you may never get to the point you're feeling comfortable. So I think that's definitely different with a family. And I think also, not that it's a negative, but my first responsibility is to my family, right? And so I think a lot of single people come and they're kind of freed up and they're going to smash it and put all their energy into that. And that's great, right? They're like a Paul, you know, he prays, you know, if you were to be like I am, so I can live like this and, you know, be free to move and share the gospel wherever. But I think as a missionary, you know, you're supported from people in the States. And I think you kind of have this pressure of, well, I've got to be all in and I got to really go for it. And I think that pressure that you might be feeling as a missionary, you put all your time into the ministry that you're called to overseas, but then you forget about your family. And that can lead to burnout really, really quickly. So finding that balance early with a family, I think, is really, really important. And it took us a little while, but I think we found it so far. I also want to say there's some benefits too, Ian, with moving as a family. I think it has helped us, I kind of touched on it, but solidify that commitment. Whereas it's a weighty decision, right? I'm moving and changing all these lives, not just mine. But then with that, like I said, you can navigate culture together. It's not just an isolated person like you're talking about Luke. It's just him. He didn't have anybody to speak to about what he's dealing with, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they may not understand fully what he's going through. Whereas I have a family, and so I can, my wife be feeling something and we can talk to each other. My kids are, so I think that's a positive as a family. You can navigate that together.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Do you think that having a family with you, do you think that could delay the need for having to get stuck in? So if you're single, you either sit at home by yourself or make friends. Whereas if you've got a family, you don't have that need to acclimatize as quickly, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it can definitely, like I said, I think it's taken us longer. And I think a part of that is, yeah, the maybe a little bit more resistance to certain family members on acclimatizing and having to walk through that together. I think myself, you know, personally, I wanted to do it as quickly as possible. And I think I wanted to just be, to move past as quickly as I could and feel like this is home. And I actually, in a negative way, didn't maybe allow some of my family members, especially my kids, to lament what they missed back home. And I was trying to almost move them on too fast and not allowing them to grieve things and to miss things. And maybe I didn't take time to do that either. So I don't know if it held us back, but it's definitely given me a little bit different perspective that we all move a little bit different in the cultural adaptation realm, and that's okay. I just have to walk through that carefully.
So what do you think was the biggest struggle that's hit you as either individually or as a family culturally? Then, like you say, it is a grieving because you're leaving behind family, friends, a church. You're leaving a lot. There's a big sacrifice to moving to the other side of the world, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And again, I think it's been different for each person, but I think in general, like some of the biggest cultural things that we have struggled with, I think you can boil it down to rural life versus city life in some respects, because we come from Wyoming, which is quite rural. You know, the biggest town we ever lived in was 30,000 people, and Edinburgh is 500,000. So, but then you're also taking that difference, adding the culture on top of it, and then adding living in a scheme, right? Which is a little bit more of a difficult area, as you know, right? Or a council estate. And so you add all those things together, and then what it is not necessarily, people talk about culture shock, you know, some of your, you know, it's what culture shock for us has been the little things that add up. It's all these little things that you're not anticipating. And sometimes no amount of reading can really prepare you for those things. It's just having to be humble and realizing that you're a fish out of water and you just got to kind of take it as it comes and be okay with some of the things that are uncomfortable to you. You know, for us, it's living in smaller houses, you know, not knowing certain brands to buy. I mean, these things might seem trivial to some, like as far as transitioning to culture, but especially with a family, it all adds up, you know? So I think that's been some of our more bigger cultural difficulties. And then obviously I think for our kids, it's been, you know, leaving friends behind and having a hard time finding friends here for them. And it's not that there aren't some opportunities. We do homeschool, so maybe there's a little bit less because we're not having our kids in the public school system. But just in the church, there hasn't been that many kids their age, so that's been difficult for them. But I guess praise God for technology, because they still get to connect with a few people back home, and that's been a nice comfort to them. Mm-hmm. But I guess the last thing to say with, you know, some of the biggest cultural struggles is, at least for us, and I think a lot of Americans can probably say, like, it's pretty comfortable. I mean, it, depending on where you come from in America, you know, we live pretty comfortably. Mm-hmm. And the idol of comfort, I think, pretty quickly gets rooted out in your heart to know that you have it when you come to live not only in the UK, but a council estate or scheme. Mm-hmm. Because it's uncomfortable. Let's just say it. It's uncomfortable, right? Yeah. And we also have to be okay that we may never feel comfortable. Yeah. We have to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. I keep wanting to feel like this is home and that this is going to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I necessarily feel out of place, even though I am. But it doesn't feel like home, if that makes sense. It's not the place I grew up. It's not the place where my normal, but I think we have to be okay with that. I'm sure Jesus wasn't comfortable leaving the glories of heaven when he came to earth either, but we're not called as a Christian to be comfortable. So that's, we have to remind ourselves that daily, I think, doing this type of ministry.
So there's obviously when any type of ministry brings difficulties, struggles, never mind moving across the world, but for us to be fruitful, there must be something that keeps us in that place. So we've discussed some of the struggles of adapting to UK life, but what actually keeps you here? Because you've been back home for holidays, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. I went back once for a funeral, and then but then we all went as a family just this last summer, actually. Mm-hmm. Was our first time back. So it'd been 2 years since our family had been back. And to be honest, I also didn't struggle to come back. My family did a little bit, but I didn't struggle coming back. But I think what keeps us here is the unity of knowing, first of all, that we had a calling, and we're still, even going back to the States and visiting all of our friends and all those things, we still knew we were supposed to be here. Such a great comfort. And what's cool, Ian, I have a little story, and my daughter might be embarrassed if she watches this, but we went to a church and we shared about all the things that we're doing. And I think in the middle of ministry, and sometimes, as you know, it's difficult, right? It's a grind, especially in these areas. But then you get those bright points, right? You get the Sams, as you know, Sam Wilkins, these guys that God miraculously saves. Every salvation is a work of God, right? But then you see their growth, their fervor for the Lord, and how he's being used by God. You get these little pictures of what God is doing here in Nidri and through 20 schemes. So I was at a church in America sharing these things, right? Sharing about 20 schemes. And my daughter, who's 14, said, "Dad," she said, "it was so good to see everything that we're doing and how God is using us." And she said, as hard as it is, I know we're supposed to be here. And it was such a blessing to my heart to hear that, because she's probably been one that has struggled the most, but she absolutely knew not only do we need to be here, but we're being a part of what God is doing in the schemes of Scotland. So that was really, really encouraging. So off the back of that, yeah, the Sams, some of the team here that just how God is rescuing these people and what we've set up here to disciple and equip them, and how God is using them. It is the little, sometimes you only get little ones, don't you, Ian? But you look back and you see God clearly working, and you hold on to those things to give you fuel to keep going, because you may have seasons where you don't get those. So I think it's important to look back at those little things and see God working to keep you going.
Awesome, encouraging. Yeah, exciting to see that. Your daughter's excited about what God is doing in Scotland as well, isn't it? And I think sometimes it's not until we're out of the situation and we're sharing with others what God is doing, we can forget, can't we, when we're in that slog daily, we can just have our head so down that we miss what God is doing. And sometimes a little break from the scheme or the estate reminds us exactly how exciting this ministry can be.
It is, man. It is, definitely. And again, don't hear me say it's easy or that it's, whatever. And there's definitely blessings along the way, but it is difficult. And, you know, we meet, as you know, monthly to pray with the other guys in the 20 Schemes Network or in Church in Hard Places. And it's a grind. And sometimes you see little fruit. Sometimes you wonder, oh man, how do you keep going? And it's just, again, coming back to, because there's a need, right? The gospel needs to go out, even though it's hard soil, and to praise God for those little blessings to continue to give you the fuel to go.
So you're out here, you're in Nidri Community Church, you've been here, what is this, coming up to your third year now?
Yeah, almost three years in September.
Right. So what's your long term plan and vision then?
So right now I'm still serving as the associate pastor here in Nidri, leading the staff team here. So this is our interns, those that were maybe training up for ministry, or that are just brand new believers that we're discipling. And that's been a great blessing, teaching at the Ragged School of Theology, which has been great as well. And right now we're content to continue to do that, because we're being used in a lot of different ways here in Nidri, even 20 Schemes Music and a few things like that. So I think we're content and really blessed to be here and continue to be used by God here, with the prospect of maybe still planting or revitalizing in the future. We're not in any necessarily hurry for that, but we're praying if, you know, an opportunity comes up, we might look at it. Could be more of a rural context, might be more comfortable, right, than to Wyoming. No, I'm kidding. But right now, yeah, we're just going to stick here in Nidri and continue to be used here in many different ways.
So this is a long-term thing then, being in the UK is not just a season. You think it's going to be longer term?
That's where we feel God's leading us. And as much as, you know, our family and friends back home would love to see us come back, and we've been, people have tried to get us back. But when we first came over here, Ian, we had a long-term kind of more vision, because again, the weighty decision, right? I'm not going to move my family just for a couple of years, but also we knew going in, and this is, people need to understand, this is a long haul ministry, isn't it? It's not a short-term thing. And having a Superman complex, thinking I'll come here for a few years and I'm just going to change the United Kingdom. No, you come and you humble yourself and you serve as long as you can and plow. And as my buddy Gerald says, you take your coffin with you, right? It's just this idea of going until The Lord calls you home if that's where he calls you to. So for now, we're playing the long-term game.
Hmm. So what you've got in Nidri is pretty unique within the UK, being part of 20 schemes. You've got a close group of planters together. How do you think that has enabled you to have this long-term vision to continue to still be here after 3 years, even during COVID? You've had opportunities to go back home. Do you think you would have stayed here without that support? Or
I think it has been absolutely essential to not only helping us with cultural stuff, but also just, yeah, the spiritual and even emotional, just support from other guys that are in this same type of ministry, right? But also they've had Americans come. They can kind of feedback a little bit of some of the struggles that we have maybe faced. The support network that 20 Schemes has built is in this church, right? Nidri has built has been so helpful. And I think, Ian, without probably Nidri, I don't know if, let's say we were move over here and we were going to go right into planting or revitalizing on our own, whatever. Looking back, I don't know if we would have hacked it. I think it would have been really difficult. The church has been so supportive, so encouraging as we've gone along. So I think people coming over, it's really good to make sure that they're plugged into a really strong local church that's going to support them, love them, and encourage them as they're navigating culture and all these different things in the ministry. But also, I know that there's times where some people are going to come over and they're not, because they're planting or revitalizing, let's say maybe right off the bat, and they're not going to have maybe the church here to support them. But there are other churches like us that can help support, right? But also having the support back home with their home churches, I think, is to know how they can pray for you, grieve with you, know when things are hard, to praise God when things are going well. Because sometimes, you know, they just kick you out the door and say, go do stuff and just update us monthly. But yeah. I think, honestly, it would be good to have more of that from your sending churches and individuals to know that they're praying for you and caring for you, because it goes a long way. I can tell you personally, we get one note from somebody individually or a church, it is such a blessing.
Yeah, I can imagine. And again, I think so many people forget, even churches that are getting a pastor in from the same country, forget that there's a pastor needs loving and discipling and blessing, and then his wife and his children. And yeah, I think sometimes we look at missionaries or pastors and planters as superheroes who've just got it all sorted, and we'll just leave them alone and let them crack on with it. We're quite willing to let them disciple and bless others, but forget that they need discipling and blessing themselves, don't they? And
oh, absolutely. And like when you and I went away just, you know, not that long ago, just for a little spiritual refreshment, just to gather together as brothers in Christ, as pastors, to just fellowship, to share struggles and to pray together. Those are sweet times, and I think important. And I think you're right. We don't maybe do enough with, maybe pastors don't do that enough, or just especially those that are planting or in our harder context. Not that, you know, there's every context has its struggle, doesn't it? But we need each other. We need each other.
Yeah. That jacuzzi, hot tub, swimming pool and sauna definitely helped as well, didn't they?
Oh, man. Don't tell people that, Ian. Come on, we're serving in hard places here.
But again, I think so many people forget that. That's just getting out into a different scenery, being with people from a similar context, just laughing and joking. We were together for 3 or 4 days, but not dismissing the need to building each other up with the word of God and prayer. But the majority of time was spent in the gym, walking, laughing, joking, just relaxing, downtime, wasn't it? And
yeah,
I think that's forgotten by so many people, and should be implemented by any organization that's not just sending people out, but receiving people. And I think the biggest problem I had was the feeling of isolation and burnout, and so many other pastors that are from the UK and planters that I know are struggling, probably worse than you are as as somebody who's come from another country, because they don't have the support that you're getting.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know if we would have hacked it if we were on our own. Just don't think we would have. And again, that's been part of the blessing of being here in Nidri. It's maybe what I thought was only going to be maybe, oh, we'll adapt within a year and be fine and sorted and maybe go plant or whatever. It's taken us longer. So as the church has navigated that with us and encourage us and support us, I think we're better equipped now to be the long term because of the investment of the local church and the network of pastors and brothers like yourself to encourage and support. That's now I feel like we're better set up for the long term game.
Yeah, so I think I was going the question I was going to ask you next was, how do you think UK churches can help the transition for pastors and planters like yourself coming over? But I think you've pretty much answered that question in what we've just been talking about, haven't you?
Yeah, that I do. I think that's it. I think it's, they really need to, it's not just, yeah, having a nice welcome basket and then just kind of, you know, pushing off. It's a, there are things, because you don't understand our context or culture and what we're moving into, that, and things you can't prepare for, that you, it's, that you, the churches here need to be, maybe it takes more of the churches, yeah, it's intentional, it just needs to be more intentional with the churches here in the UK to, like the like they have been at Nidri, to make us feel welcome and comfortable, well, as comfortable as we can be, right? But yeah, and obviously Nidri is a unique beast too, because I think some of the Americans that have come, that have gone to some of our other plants, still do feel a little bit more of that isolation. They're smaller plants. They don't have any other Americans in there. But again, because we have that network and they can come down weekly for the Ragged School, or we're doing different things, we try our best to do what we can to encourage those that might feel isolated to stick in and keep going, because if not, you're just going to continue to get short-term missionaries, aren't you?
Yeah. And that's, again, I feel a bit convicted in when you were sharing about these little things that make you feel comfortable. Like if you knew the brands of food that you were buying or sweet you were buying for your kids, and just the little things can help make that transition so much easier. Whereas when we had Luke over, he was like, oh, we don't have a tumble dryer. I was like, so you've come to a hard place, get over it. You use a clothesline. But again, just these little things that seemed irrelevant to me, weren't big to him, but it was just an extra thing that added to his feeling like he wasn't at home, that he was from a completely different culture. Yeah, it just adds to the struggles, doesn't it? So I think if we can be aware of the little things that we can do to make the harder things more bearable, probably would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even little things like having access to a car. We're used to driving in the States everywhere. And like you said, a clothesline. Yeah, that's a big, I have five kids, so we do a lot of laundry. We got to have a tumble dryer, Ian. But there, yeah, it does add up, all those little tiny things. And it, again, yeah, you're right. They seem, it's insignificant in your culture because they're normal. That's just how your life is, but that's not how life was back home. And so it builds up to make it a big thing, and you just get frustrated. Why am I driving on this side of the road, Ian? But you get over it.
Yeah. Oh, great. And again, if you wanted to plant a church, you've got a church already just in your own family, haven't you? With yep. What is it? Eight of you including the dog. So you've got plenty. You're doing 20 Schemes Music. You're involved with that. We've seen your family in the conservatory, baby in the high chairs. You're strumming away.
Yep.
I'll put some links up to some of the songs that you've been singing there. But again, I think what's great to see is somebody coming out and having the gifts utilized, not just yours, but the whole family. So often we bring pastors in and neglect the family. So we've seen that musically, your family is involved heavily. What other ways has the church welcomed your family and utilized their giftings to show that you're not just the important one, that you're all valued?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think our again, yeah, we have done a lot with the music, and we serve Andy and Parker, my two older ones, are playing bass and cajon, the drum box with me on Sunday mornings for worship. So every Sunday right now, pretty much they're serving with me on the music. And then also my son, you know, as he's getting older, he's starting to do video editing. So he's helping with the 20 schemes, video edits. We did a video for Easter for the community that was shown in 8 different primary schools, and he did all the video editing for it. It was brilliant. And that's been a really cool encouragement to both of them too, to see that God didn't just bring me or me and my wife, you know, he brought us all here. And they profess faith, they're baptized, so they're believers, and so God is using them and their giftedness too, and I think that's a huge encouragement to them. And I don't know if other churches are doing it, but yeah, you gotta allow opportunity to get your family involved in ministry. Not just you, we're all, if you're a believer, you are to be done, you're set aside for the work of the ministry, right? So we gotta enable them to do that.
And it's sad because, I mean, that is, helped you out as a family because of that transition. But even within the UK, pastors are moving to the other ends of the country, leaving family. The sacrifice isn't as great, but the loneliness and the isolation can feel exactly the same, whether you're 1,000 miles or 100 miles. People aren't on your doorstep. Your kids have got to make friends. But so many times I've spoken with pastors whose congregations and church leadership have made the wives or the children so uncomfortable or seen as an inconvenience or a bit part, rather than they expect the wife and family to sacrifice without having any of the benefits that even other members get.
Yeah. You know, one cool thing, Ian, before we even came, I remember when I was interviewing to come, and Mez said, by the way, we don't think we're getting 2 for 1, meaning there's no pressure, for your wife to, be the, there's this pressure on a pastor's wife too, to do certain things, but we just knew it was like, you've got a family and take care of them, but also there's opportunities for her to serve, which she is. She's doing discipleship with ladies in the community. She loves to bake. So she bakes stuff and things, but there's no extra pressure just because she's a pastor's wife to do X, Y, and Z. Just fit in where you're gifted, and that's been a huge blessing.
Cool. And what about homeschooling as well? You mentioned that you homeschool. We homeschool as well. We are not your typical homeschoolers down in Middlesbrough. People are shocked when they find out we homeschool. In England, it's very, very rare. It's growing, and especially since the pandemic, I think more people are considering it. But in America, it's a lot more common than in the UK. So how have people reacted to you being homeschoolers?
It definitely is. You go out, do stuff like on a school day with our kids, like we'll go out to, visit a castle or something. They're like, what are your kids doing here? You get the weird looks. But honestly, they might wind me up once in a while around the church, but it's been okay. You do get the randoms that around the community that might see it as weird. And I know that there's some out there that might think, as a missionary, how many opportunities are you missing for your kids to not be in school, right? To evangelize and meet people. And I get that side of it. I really do. But it's helped our transition, Ian. I think having our kids home and being able to school them and still have some of that normalcy that we had back in the States, we're schooling at home. And now we're still doing that here. I think it's helped us adapt a little bit faster. And maybe some people think we would have adapted faster if the kids went in. I guess that's up to, each individual, but we do feel still led to homeschool. And as you know, the curriculums here in the public school are just getting more and more crazy, and so we feel still a responsibility to train them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, and Lord willing, they follow make a confess or profession of faith and repent and follow Christ their lives, but ultimately we have only a few years. Isn't it crazy how time flies? We only have a few years to pour into our kids, and so we're going to pour into them as much as we can, and then let God handle it from there. But yeah, we are definitely an outsider up in Scotland as well for homeschooling, but we're okay with that.
Yeah, and for me, my eldest is coming up 20, my youngest nearly 14, and time has flown past. If we hadn't have homeschooled, that the amount of time that I've invested into ministry, I would have missed these kids growing up. But because of the type of ministry we were doing, they've been involved in it. Esther would always travel to me when I was coming up to Nidri. She'd get a night in a hotel and she'd go and hang around with the kids at the church or hang around with some of the adults. And, and I think what they found is being part of the ministry, I don't know, I think they've been encouraged. That's helped with them to feel part of the ministry and not just like the pastor's kids, that they're involved and they've got their own friendships across. They might not have many the same age, but they've got them across the age group. So
yeah, definitely, that's a great point. And like my kids, who are my, especially my daughter Andy's been playing bass for some of the 20 scheme stuff, like kind of build it into her day. Like this time you're practicing your bass, you're learning music, and not just are you developing a skill that you love, but you're getting to use it for God's kingdom and these songs. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, my eldest daughter was out with the ukulele at a dementia club playing the ukulele for the old people and stuff like that, and carol services and Easter services during the day at people's at care homes for people with disabilities and things like that. So they've had a huge opportunity to mix with a number of different people that at school they wouldn't have been able to do that. Yeah, so it's definitely an alternative for people to think about when doing this type of ministry, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Cool. Jason, I really appreciate your time. I've asked you a few questions that interest me, but have you got anything you would like to share that you've learned over the last couple of years that I've not picked up on?
You guys are all crazy over here. No, I'm just kidding. Well, you know, I find Americans are quite loud. I think they see in America. I'm pretty loud. I like to yell a lot, as people know back here. But we love our time here and love all you guys. And no, it's been a blessing, man.
Cool. And I must admit, you are the most British-like American I've ever met.
That's a good thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. You're probably the only one I've not offended. So.
Well, like I said at the beginning, right, it actually does take a certain type of personality. I really do think that. And I know some people have struggled that have come from like the South part of America that's a little bit more proper and you don't want to offend people as much. Where back in Wyoming, we are so laid back and rural. I mean, we poke fun at each other all the time, and that's what we do here, isn't it? And so it's, I mean, to an extent, but you know what I mean? It does take a certain personality.
And that's what I was hitting at. I think, do you think it's because you're from a rural background that you've got a similar sense of humor?
I do, yeah.
I wouldn't say to the Brits, but to the working class.
Yeah, that's probably it, yeah. So in all that, yeah, God, I had no experience doing this type of ministry before I came, but somehow God knew and God was preparing for it. So here we are.
Awesome. Brilliant. I've loved chatting with you again, Jason. I hope to see you in person soon. But thanks very much for joining me on the In Context podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks, brother.
Cheers, bro.